met entertainment producer David Charpentier backstage as a tornado roared through Pride Fest, the world's largest LGBT music festival. The intense rain fell for hours, and people had to be moved into shelters as a storm passed through the Milwaukee fairgrounds. We were fearing for our lives. And yet, after the storm passed, an amazing music concert blossomed like sunshine pouring through the clouds.
As entertainment producer for Pride Fest, David can handle just about any intense, scary, or emotional situation with any artist, no matter how extreme the circumstances. Now he's managing some of the biggest drag queens in entertainment while living with Addison's disease and type 1 diabetes. How does he do it?
Join us as David shares the inside scoop on all the celebrities for the music festival, diva temper tantrums, strange riders, and all the juicy backstage bits on Monique, Chaka Khan, Cyndi Lauper, Patti LaBelle, Natasha Bedingfield, and Katy Perry.
Plus, Lady Gaga will grab whatever is closest to her and slap it on.
Christopher Maloney will not be returning to Law & Order SVU.
And gay men who declare themselves straight acting are not really acting very straight, because obsessing about masculinity is one of the things that gay men do best.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Over the years, one of the most remarkable people we've had the pleasure of meeting doing this show is the incredibly resourceful, capable entertainment producer David Charpentier. He's now working as the entertainment director for Pride Fest, the world's largest LGBT music festival, and a sponsor of this podcast. Like Coachella, forget about those fellas, Lollapalooza is full of losers, Pride Fest this summer is where it's at. And on today's show, David is taking us behind the scenes and giving us all the dirt on the celebrities, the divas, and the tornadoes that have whizzed through Pride Fest, through the festival, through the years. And you have actually opened up all the riders of Monique, Cyndi Lauper, Chaka Khan, Patti LaBelle, and you're going to give us the dirt. But first, say hi to the good people. Hi, David.
Hi, Mark Fausto, everyone.
Hi, David.
I'm so excited.
So what is the craziest rider you've ever gotten?
I think the craziest ones were they demand 80 pounds worth of food and they only eat a couple pounds of it. And then when they leave, it's like you have this entire room filled with like crab legs and steaks. And it's like, what do we do with this?
Who did that to you?
Chaka Khan was a little bit like that.
She's like, I want king crab legs.
Yeah.
She had a deep fat fryer, I heard, in her dressing room.
she had, you know, the four-way toasters and the fryers and...
she did not have a fryer in there.
Four coffee makers. I don't know why you need four coffee makers.
She did not have four coffee makers. Yeah.
Now,
really?
I don't want to burn too many bridges on today's show, but it's like you've had celebrities like throw insane temper tantrums, and we're not going to say who they are, but like one of them took a big pot of coffee and just poured it on the floor and then threw the coffee pot and said, this coffee is terrible.
Yeah, I had one infamous celebrity who a lot of gays know very well, and I won't mention by name, but yeah. Has a very popular TV show right now, who I had done a show with a few years ago, and when she arrived in the backstage area in the morning for soundcheck, we had a continental breakfast ready as demanded by her writer, and one of the demands was Starbucks coffee freshly brewed in a coffee maker. So we had that ready to go. And when this artist went to pour a cup of that coffee, he was taking a sip of it. And I just happened to be standing right by there. And he took
it. It's so delicious, though. It's such a great story.
Yeah.
Wait, finish it. I'm sorry. So he took the coffee.
Yeah, he took the coffee, had it in his hand, and he took a sip of it. And I just saw like a silence. It wasn't like a normal drink of coffee. And then all of a sudden he looked at me and he's like, this is not coffee. And he took the coffee cup. He overturned it on the floor, dumped the entire glass out on the floor and said, this is disgusting. This is not how you make coffee. And went into the dressing room and slammed the door.
And so then you had to call the janitor and said, you better work and clean that up.
Well, and the little manager came running and said, you need to know, figure out how to make your coffee.
Or else it'll end up on the floor.
Wait, hold on a second. But, you know, can we, like, take the celebrity's temper tantrum side for a second? Like, was the coffee kind of crappy? I mean, these are, you know, big industrial events, yeah. And it's really hard to get, like, food fresh backstage, isn't it? Or
it is, especially when you're doing a festival and it's, you know, you have to realize it's an outdoor environment with very basic structures, you know. Yeah. You don't have a lot of amenities in there, so you're trying to,
because basically that place, the amenity there is, it doubles as a tornado safety environment. What do they call it? A bomb shelter.
But wait, hold on. So it's really hard to get good stuff to them, and so when the celebrity gets there and they're very stressed out, they, you know, there's millions of people watching them on stage. I mean, this festival brings in, what was the turnout last year?
Last year, it's well over 30,000 people.
30,000 people.
Yeah.
All with their, you know, cell phones. So just coming to watch on stage and videotaping and tweeting, you know, this person, she's not as hot as she used to be. Or, oh my God, she's incredible. She blew me away. And so their careers are kind of like, you know, riding on this event in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like, I understand their demands and their expectations because, you know, if you think about it, they're on the road all the time. They're never really at home. And it's like when we're at home, we have the things that we're used to. Like mm-hmm. we wake up to that cup of coffee from our coffee maker. We have those, you know, Nutrigrain bars that we eat, or we have that fresh fruit in the bowl that we have, or whatever it is that we're used to.
That enema in our shower.
Yeah,
that we should do
the Epsom salt bath.
Well, when we first met you, so we became involved with Pride Fest Milwaukee. We were media sponsors and entertainers. I think it was about 4 years ago, and it was a horrific tornado tore through the Midwest right on the night that as we arrived, and Natasha Bedingfield was the star act that we were going to introduce that night. And backstage, I had never met you before, and I was like a very attractive guy, but what really struck me about it is that you were dealing with drag queen, after diva, after musician, after dilettante, after personal assistant and manager, all screaming at you.
And us
screaming at you, oh my God, there's a tornado, and there's a kind of, you know, even Natasha Bedingfield was like, I cannot go on that stage, it's all wet, I'm going to die, and I'll get electrocuted and stuff. And you were calm, cool, and collected, and extremely good at dealing with a broad range of people. And then later I find out why you're so good at that. Because you actually have supernatural powers as a result of an illness that you developed in the last 3 or 4 years. Can we talk about that?
Sure.
So what is the medical term for the fact that your adrenaline glands don't work properly?
Yeah, it's called Addison's disease. It's adrenal insufficiency. Uh-huh. And then I also have type 1 diabetes.
So you don't get stressed out. Because your body doesn't produce that stress hormone. So you're just like, everything is just like, whatever.
Yeah, well, it's my body doesn't produce the hormone that makes the adrenal, which is the energy for your body. So I take steroids 3 times a day that helps me create that energy.
And what is the name of the steroid?
Hydrocortisone.
And so what's interesting from being your friend and observing you through the years is that you're like Spock on Star Trek. Or Data, you can handle any kind of intense emotional things. Like Mark and I, we will turn into man children. We will crumble like soggy bread and milk.
Whereas turn off.
Mark turns off, or I'll cry, or just get stressed out. But you,
I'll drink.
Miraculously handle all that stuff. And so recently, not only have you become the, you know, well respected and loved for your work with Pride Fest as the entertainment director, but you've kind of become the go-to guy for a lot of drag queens, and you're managing a ton of drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah, it's a lot of drama.
So, I mean, at a certain point, is like your body going to be like, wake up, David, you know, you may not feel stressed, but you are stressed.
Yeah. I think, you know, having Addison's, people think that I don't have any empathy. People who don't know me think that I have no empathy level. So, you know, when I don't react to things, it's for some reason they think that like I have no interest or no emotion toward it. But I'm very, you know, I care very much about everything that I do in my life. And it's like, that's why everything that I do in my life, it's like, I want to really put my heart into it. And I love entertainment so dearly. And I love to see people laugh. And I love to...
Even though laughing is hard for you sometimes. Well, an angel cannot make love because an angel is love.
But it's not that. It's just the stress where most people would be pulling their hair out. You're just like...
Whatever.
You have like no fight or flight response. You're like, whatever. I'd like to see you on safari, and when the lions come after you, you're like...
Well,
it.
I mean, do you ride roller coasters? Do you like? Are you just like completely calm and cool and collected on a roller coaster?
I love
coaster?
Everything. I love turbulence.
On an airplane?
Yeah, I love intense orgasms. I love biting.
But is like, because you're dating a guy, a very cute guy who's sitting over there right now. And does it?
Hi, Jason.
Jason, hey. And does that stress out like when you're dating guys, or they're like, I can't believe that you would react to that, and then you're like, well, I just, you know, I am Vulcan. And I cannot react that because Vulcans do not have feelings. I mean, in a way, isn't that the case?
Yes. Answer the question. Because I have one after that.
I love Jason. Hi, Jason. Thank you for being here. I am very reactive. Like tonight, I went to see Adele in concert and I cried for like four of her songs. I heard her perform Someone Like You, and
but you took medication before you cried so you could cry.
Yes. I took steroids to cry. it was very intense, and I don't know if it's because of the steroids I took before the show or because Adele was just that amazing and beautiful.
Like, well, what about, because like I often find like when some of my best orgasms are when I'm really just stressed out. How do you, like, how does that work when you don't experience stress?
You just wanted
like,
to say that, Mark.
What?
Well, no, I agree with that. Like, today, I was very stressed out because right now it's 2 weeks before the festival, and I'm dealing with all the girls from RuPaul's Drag Race and their major touring for the summer, so I'm very stressed. I'm getting, like, you know, 300 emails a day. I'm trying to go through that, and it's like I never get time to, like, have, like, me time, and it's like right now I'm supposed to be on vacation with Jason in Chicago. We came here to see
and
Adele.
And here you are working.
I'm working. And
right now, as we speak.
So like today I forced a bath upon us at our hotel. I strung up a bath while Jason was out getting a vegan lunch for us, and when he came back the bath was cold because he took too long. So we had to refresh it with some more hot water, and we had a little session in the bath.
Oh, I wondered why you guys smelled so nice and clean.
And
today.
That took away a lot of stress.
And you dropped the soap several times.
So you do feel stress.
I do feel stress, yeah, but, you know, there's good ways to relieve it.
How does that manifest with you? Like, when you feel stress, for most people, it's like their hands tremble, or they're sweating, or they get tense, you can hear it. But with you, it seems very, even when you're stressed, you come across as very calm. So how do you know you're actually stressed?
I think it's just, I don't know if I get stressed. I think I just... I'm concerned with like people being happy, and I like details, and like I'm always worried about the next thing, and I want to be happy, and you know, I want to just keep going.
Do you take like a match and hold your hand over it and be like to see how long you can hold your hand over it?
I do like the 3-wick candles because you can light 2 of them, and when you have to turn the candle the other way and the 2 flames are coming at you while you're trying to light the 3rd wick. It's
what?
Kind of funny.
I don't know what that is. You keep that kinky stuff to yourself.
Well, because so when we first met you in Milwaukee, there was a tornado, and it was like the whole place, we got up there, and the whole place was kind of shut down, wasn't it, Mark?
Well, how would you know? You were back at the hotel room sleeping while I was stuck in the bomb shelter back there thinking, my God, please don't let me die today. I don't want to die in this tornado. And then you're like, okay, the tornado might come through, but it's okay. You can leave the bomb shelter. Go hang out in the trailer. And I'm like, I'm not one of those people that hangs out in trailers when tornadoes come by. I'm not one of those people.
Well, you were stuck backstage with people you didn't care for too much.
There was somebody back there I didn't care for. I said, please, God, just don't let me die today with this person.
Can I mention or no?
No.
Okay.
But what's interesting was, too, is like there was...
I don't care about that person.
All the acts had been canceled or shelved because you ran out of time, and a lot of the evening's entertainment had just had to be shut down. Right?
I had acts that had flown from Australia and London to perform that day, and we had to cancel because of the tornadoes, and it was scary. I mean, we have something in our production office backstage. It's like the red line, and that phone only rings when something is really happening, like something mm-hmm. bad is going down. And the phone rang, and that was the first time it ever rang. And it was
the bat phone.
Yeah.
And it was Batman on the other line.
Yeah, no, it was so weird because I thought when the phone rang, I was like, okay, it's, you know, I realized the weather's getting bad. And I thought it was maybe like a call from the venue operator, because we rent a venue on the lakefront in Milwaukee. And I thought, okay, maybe it's like the security there telling us that there's bad weather coming. But in actuality, I picked up the phone and it was a meteorologist from the TV station calling me, and he was saying, so I'm just letting you know there, you know, we have a funnel cloud reported on a radar and it's heading straight toward your festival grounds. So you need to do everything that you can to secure
and evacuate
all of your patrons into a safe place. And then, okay, so you're in a big open field basically, mm-hmm. and you have a few interspersed brick buildings. So what do you do with 30,000 people? You
shove them into the brick buildings.
Yeah. So what did we do with our brick building?
There were still people that just like hanging out. They're like, I don't care. Whatever. But they were crazy.
And they said, you know, anyone that was in trailers or buses or, you know, anything that was mobile, we had to evacuate. And the first thing I thought of when he said that was, oh my God, Natasha Bedingfield is taking a nap on her tour bus right now. And there's a tornado coming.
Natasha Bedingfield's best known for "I got a pocket full of sunshine in my pocket."
I got sunshine in my pocket and something
unwritten.
Unwritten, yeah.
Unwritten. Yes. Yeah.
The rest is all unwritten. And she also sings, "Ooh, I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you." So, you know, if you're gay and like under the age of 25, chances are Natasha Bedingfield's songs are on your cell phone as ringtones.
Yes.
And so you had the unhappy job of waking up the diva because she was in her, to tell her that her life was at risk.
Storming into her tour bus in the middle of the afternoon when she's sleeping and basically like punching every body part that I saw on the bus.
You were like touching her?
Well, you know, you have to wake them up. It's like, you know,
they were sleeping inside the bus.
You hear the sirens going off and it's like, yeah, it was very scary, actually. Like, I was scared and I didn't want anyone to get hurt. So there were only three solid buildings on the grounds and everything else was just open playing fields. So we packed everyone into the backstage building, all the patrons, all the staff, all the entertainers, and everyone was packed into the like sardines.
And then our unhappy job was to try to keep everything moving and keep everybody calm backstage and in the audience. And at the same time, we had Amanda and Tracy Tyler and a gaggle of other drag queens, and everybody's act had to be scrapped. But for somehow we managed to get Tracy on that stage in the pouring rain, like Diana Ross, singing her trans version of "I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar."
And she looked fantastic in her zebras. It was a giraffe pattern, but it was in black and white bathing suit. Yes.
Yes, full body swimsuit.
It was a gay Joplin.
Mm-hmm. She was a full figured, large and in charge giraffe.
Mm-hmm. Diana Ross.
Diana Ross. And then backstage, Natasha Bedingfield's talking to her manager, whose real name is Nigel.
Yes, people in the UK are named Nigel.
So she was like, "Nigel, I'm not going on that stage." And la la. And she's like screaming.
I'm not going on that fucking stage and getting electrocuted. I have no interest for $50,000 to die.
And I said to her, I said, "Natasha, you know, you're just like Diana Ross. This will be legendary." And she's like, "I'll be fucking dead. I just want to be a legend." So she was like not having it. But I think like I planted the idea of her being like Diana Ross, because they were like mopping the stage and they were. And later on, I found out through Oprah's show with Diana Ross that when she did that concert in the park when it rained, her life was really in danger back then. And all the tech crew was like, "Are you crazy? Are you going to go out in the rain? You're going to die, Diana Ross." And she's like, "I love my fans. I'll do anything for them." And so Natasha Bedingfield's like that image of Diana Ross playing in the park was playing in her mind when she went onto the stage and she did a remarkable concert. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really was extraordinary. And the magic happens because the energy of the performers there and the diehard fans are there, and all the cynics have been washed away by the tornado. You know, and so I thought it was one of the most remarkable highlights of that
and
festival.
And boy, did we party that night. Ooh, shout out to Josh for setting us up.
Yes.
Can we talk about Kathy Griffin not liking hard rock lesbian metal bands and refusing to stay at a hotel within our city and wanting to stay 2 hours away?
She didn't want to stay in... Why didn't she want to stay in Milwaukee?
We didn't have good enough hotels there.
The Pfister's not good enough?
No, she didn't want a fist.
She didn't want a fist? So did she actually drive down to Chicago to stay in a hotel?
Yeah, we had to drive her back and forth. Chicago, Milwaukee.
Well, it's not that bad. It's like an hour.
It's like, you know, it's an hour version on 2 hours.
It's version on 2 hours. But yeah, she's from L.A. They're used to that. That's like driving to like, you know, from like Santa Monica to East L.A. or something. Or West L.A.
Yeah.
East L.A.
So you booked Kathy Griffin and, you know, who we hear from people is she's a very nice person, just like Coco Peru. Mm-hmm. And
David actually was there for that when we had lunch with Coco.
We had lunch with Coco Peru.
Honestly, how many times did Coco tell you that people thought she was a nice person?
She's a very nice person.
How many times did she actually
say that?
She's
a very nice person.
I swear it was like some kind of drag hypnosis.
But
she is a nice person.
But it was kind of strange. I think because the tour, you know, when you're making a living as an artist and you're touring, it can be so stressful. And that you hang on to these little comfort, what is it called when somebody, obsessive compulsive disorder. And for Coco, it's reminding people that she's nice because she wants to connect and have things go easy.
It's called writers.
Oh, and sometimes I guess it's probably too, because her humor actually sometimes can be quite mean, you know, and biting.
And so, you know, when people actually meet Coco Peru, they're like, she really is a really nice person. And but she wants to let you know, I'm a very nice person. Now, you also have the interesting job that you have to deal with all these writers of all these celebrities. And what is exactly is a writer for people who don't know what that is?
A writer is basically an attachment to a contract when you hire an entertainer. So you hire an artist to perform at your event, but it also comes with this packet that could be anywhere from 2 pages to a million pages.
So it's the fee plus their demands. Do the demands ever outweigh the price or the cost of the actual fee?
It can on occasion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone's like, I want 40 peacocks.
A $5,000 bottle of wine for the keyboardist.
Really? Has that ever happened?
Not to me.
Oh.
Wow.
But
can you say what band that was? Have,
but there's like, you know, a lot of the really A-list metal, you know, like rock bands and...
Because you work in an industry and so you guys share stories back and forth with each other and nightmares and...
And there's a lot of like non-monetary demands too. Like Katy Perry, she doesn't allow any of her limo drivers to look at her through her rear view mirror.
Because is she like Medusa? If they look at her, they'll turn to stone and then all of a sudden like they'll crash the car and she'll die.
So they're either not allowed to look in the rearview mirror or they have to put black tape over the mirror.
What? So hold on. Isn't that even more dangerous not being able to look behind the mirror?
Well, I guess you have to stick your head out the window and...
Really? So the limo driver will put a piece of black tape in order to avoid looking at Katy Perry.
So one of the women that came to perform actually had, how many blue towels did this performer need?
This was Chaka Khan.
And she wanted 35?
It was 35 dark blue towels. Not regular blue and not black, but dark blue towels.
And what did Chaka do with them? Did she like sleep on them?
Well, it was 20 full size and 15 hand size. And it was for the purpose of just mostly wiping off makeup and
on
so
stage
that people couldn't see that you were wearing makeup, because they want them dark enough so that you could wipe your face and then put it down and then it would still look like there was nothing on it.
Wouldn't you want to have a flesh colored you know, like if it's Chaka Khan, like a brown colored towel as opposed to the
blue
one?
I think it shows the makeup because I think some of them wear like sometimes a lighter makeup. For some reason, like black will definitely show makeup because, you know, black you have, and then white will show everything. So it's like you have to find the in between, and that's why they found the dark blue.
So the dark blue. So she knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
So who else has got crazy riders? Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, Cyndi Lauper.
Is she like one of the top demanding talents?
I think she's one of the top drunks.
Really?
Yeah.
Atta girl.
You go, Cyndi.
But I love her because she drinks wine like I drink wine. I mean, she polished off 2 to 3 bottles of wine solo backstage.
So she gets, when she comes to perform, she really gets into it.
Yeah. I mean, she, you know, our contract was for a 1-hour show and she did 3 hours. And then after she was done, she wouldn't leave. While she was living... literally.
I don't have anywhere else to go.
Well, come on, guys. Let's potty.
Everyone's like, we're done, Cindy.
She was walking around backstage with her white wine bottle in her hand, pacing back and forth like a cheetah at the zoo. And Brandy was arriving because it was almost 5 a.m. And Brandy was ready to do sound check. And Cindy was still like riding off of her buzz from the night before.
So what time did Cindy get off stage?
Cindy got off at like 12:30. She went past her curfew and we got fined.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But it was worth it. It was the stuff that legends are made of.
Yeah. So she stayed there and partied all night, and Brandy was coming in the morning.
And Brandy's like, what the fuck is Cindy Lauper doing here drunk for my sound check?
Really? Yeah. So Cindy Lauper wouldn't leave while Brandy, bless her heart, she's only had one hit, really. You know, I think we're alone now.
That's not Brandy. That's Tiffany.
What is Brandy then? Oh, Brandy. I'm confusing one diva, one TV show. Diva. Anyways, we're going to tell you 1 second what outrageous, crazy things that Cindy Lauper had in her rider. But first, we'd like to remind the listeners that today's show would not be possible without your support. Go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a contribution, and you get more delicious shows like this one.
I want to thank some of the listeners that have recently donated since the last time we taped a show. Teresa, Frank,
hey, Teresa,
Frank, Doug, and Andy. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much for your support.
Doug, Frank, and Andy.
Mm-hmm. And Teresa.
Teresa,
thank you. And today's show is also brought to you in part by Pride Fest Milwaukee. Join us this June 10th through the 12th at the nation's largest showcase of LGBT music and talent at Pride Fest in Milwaukee on the Summerfest grounds. There's going to be over 150 acts, including David. Who's going to be there?
Monique,
babies.
Who else?
Lots of other
Salt and Pepper.
You got it. And Mark?
And Shelly Wright.
And Mark and
Leanne Rimes.
We're going to do a duet together.
Pam Ann.
Yes.
Pam Ann, the whore of the skies.
Winter Gordon.
Who's Winter Gordon?
Dirty, dirty, talk, talk.
Chris Crocker, Devin Green. You've heard them on the show. They're going to be there in person. And they are forced to be there. Mm-hmm. So they cannot run away from you.
And almost the entire cast of RuPaul's Drag Race.
I love it.
Almost every single person from RuPaul's Drag Race will be there.
Mm-hmm.
Trapped in the tornado shelter.
There's no tornadoes.
Chained to the fence, and everyone can pull their favorite jewels off of them.
It's Drag Race Reunion Part 2.
And there's no security.
None.
So visit pridefest.com to get a discount on your hotel and tickets. Don't forget, it's June 10th through the 12th in the Summerfest grounds in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Visit pridefest.com. We'll see you there.
Pridefest.com is one of the sponsored hotels. Is what? The
Doubletree in Milwaukee.
And I recommend people stay at the Doubletree because that's where you're going to put all the drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race in there.
Yes.
Is that correct?
I have to say that we put almost every entertainer from the festival at the hotel with everyone because we want it's all about the family. We want everyone to hang out together, and it's amazing.
Here's a pro tip, listener. If you want to see the drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race attack each other drunk at a bar when no one's watching, but everybody will be watching, it's hang out at the lobby in the cocktail bar of the Doubletree Hotel, and you get a second show after the show. That is where last year Bruce Vilanch stuck his finger up Teriyaki's butt, and she liked it. True story.
Delicious.
So what is on Cindy Lauper's rider that is the most outrageous thing? Like, just read it to us.
Well, upon arrival, she demanded a doctor immediately.
A doctor?
Yes.
What kind of doctor?
Just a general practice doctor to care for her needs and give her a checkup upon arrival. And
sounds
after that,
reasonable.
Yeah.
Is that for all of her stops, or was she not feeling well?
She wasn't feeling well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So that's reasonable.
Yeah.
So she shook him down for prescription drugs.
Yeah. So she got some pills. And then
I don't feel so good.
And then we had to take her to the presidential suite for a Epsom salt bath.
Sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For, you know,
got a nice soak.
Yeah.
Soak up the vocal cords, get it relaxed, get her true colors shining through.
Mm-hmm. After her bath, I think she realized she needed some underwear.
So she went shopping.
Yes. So one of our runners had to take her to the local Macy's to buy some fresh underwear.
And did you have to pay for the underwear?
She actually paid for the underwear.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She wants. I was pleasantly surprised.
But you would have happily paid for it if it came to it.
Yes, and I would have given her the underwear off my ass.
Oh.
What kind of underwear did she buy? Do you know?
You know, I never saw it.
You don't say.
I don't know. Yeah.
And then afterwards, what happened then?
Afterwards, she came to the venue, and we had 3 pages of food ready for her and wine. I think an entire page of wine. And she did her show, and
what
then
kind
she
of wine does she like to drink?
Oh, what does she like?
She likes white wine.
You have it right there. It's like,
I want to get drunk Coupe. Just like Cyndi Lauper. What wine am I going to drink?
$600 or more French Bordeaux. Ron Matusalem, Private Grand Reserva Rum. Louis Jadot White Burgundy. 4 bottles of Corona Light.
Wow.
So she wanted a $600 plus bottle of Burgundy.
Yeah.
So that's taken into the factor when you're bringing these A-listers to Pride Fest. You know, I can imagine that, you know, Salt and Pepper, Leanne Rimes have equal demanding things. But Monique, who's large and in charge, she has a writer that is almost sounds like a bit from her stand-up act.
It is. Baked chicken, string beans, fried chicken wings, buffalo wings, cheese and crackers, assorted cold cuts, crab legs.
So she wants to, you know, she likes to eat. She wants to have a thing. She has how many people flying in her entourage?
Oh, yeah. So here's the deal. She's coming in to do a comedy show. So how many people does a Monique comedy show consist of?
Compared to Kathy Griffin, who's going to be doing the similar thing, it was her and her manager.
Mm-hmm.
So Monique is bringing how many people?
9 people with her, and I can tell you all of their titles.
So they all have, each person has their title.
Oh, they have their titles. It's called, actually, I was on the phone with her assistant today, and they're called the Glam Squad.
The Glam Squad.
The Monique Glam Squad.
But she doesn't shave her legs, so wouldn't that be one less person up for her job? But she went on Barbara Walters, and she's proud. But Mark, you said actually that on the show that a lot of African American women don't shave their legs.
I don't think most African American, because the reason why you shave your legs is because you don't want to have that hair. And so, but I think a lot of times with like the girls that I knew that I went to school with, they're like, look, I have little tiny hair. You can't barely even see it.
And if your skin's dark enough, it's not even going to show.
Right.
So it's like, what's the big deal? And actually, if you're African American, from what I've understood, is that the act of shaving too can irritate your skin.
Right. And I think also too, the girls that I knew, the hair that grew on their legs was not long at all.
Yeah. So not like some of the gorilla girls we know around here.
But are you ready for the Monique comedy to cast list?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. There's an interesting one on here. It makes sense to me. Executive assistant.
Okay.
You know, who arrives the day before to handle all the paperwork, the checking in and, you know, business and contracts. Security, who also comes in the day before to check out the hotel, the venue, and, you know, figure out proper protocol for her and safe places to go. And then the people who arrive the day of are her hairdresser, her wardrobe, her dresser, her makeup artist, her videographer who films everything that she does, her road manager, and a double.
Are you serious? Yes.
She's like Queen Amidala.
She does have a person who travels with her that is a double who looks
like Monique.
Yes.
Wow.
To take the bullet.
I bet she's fucking that person.
Wow. Because she opened
and
that
eye. To make it even better.
Yeah.
It's a drag queen.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
I want to talk to Monique's drag queen double.
Mm-hmm. Can you set up as an interview with her?
Wow.
So she's like Queen Amidala on Star Wars. It's like she, in case she gets kidnapped, they're really kidnapping Monique the drag queen and not Monique the entertainer, and she could still come on stage.
And she can still do BET, yes.
Because this is her first LGBT gig since she won the Oscar for Precious, where she's doing a whole set aimed at a gay and lesbian audience.
Yeah.
The whole hour, how long is her set supposed to be?
It's to be over an hour. It's her full comedy set. The first time she's ever toured her show to a gay audience. And she is developing an entire set specifically for us. And I think that's amazing. Because you don't understand how much work it takes to put a show together. You can't just go up on stage and talk. Like, you have to prepare. Like, you think about, like, Kathy Griffin and Wanda Sykes and Margaret Cho. They spend, you know, a year preparing their tour, and then they go out on the road for like 50 or 60 cities to do the same show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Monique is developing a show for our audience, and I think that's so beautiful.
And it's going to be sassy and hilarious and outrageous. I heard rumors that she's actually planning to parody Precious.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I'm just like, oh my God, I cannot wait. That is going to be the funniest, funniest thing I'm going to see. Because, you know, my sense of humor is kind of transgendered. And so what makes me laugh the hardest is what a sassy black drag queen, you know, street worker is going to find funny. And I think like Monique, you know, channels that divaness, that power, you know, and I think it's going to be fantastic. And so make sure she has plenty to eat. Give it a eat. Now, do any of the drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race have riders or demands that are unusual or strange? Because you're actually like managing quite a few of them right now.
How many are you managing right now? Or who are you managing?
I'm managing several of them from the show. And as far as writers go, they're starting their careers, so they're very reasonable. You know, someday they may have larger writers. But, you know, writers are really just about, like, making it feel like home. So, like, for Stacey Lane Matthews, at home, she's used to green tea and Twizzlers. So
do you buy a bag? So she doesn't want... Now, Stacey Lane Matthews was known in this season's RuPaul's Drag Race for actually imitating Monique.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's playing her on an off-Broadway show.
Mm-hmm. And she's going to open for Monique.
And she's also known for liking her fried chicken, but she actually likes green tea and Twizzlers.
She does, yes. And fried chicken. The last show...
Because we're actually planning on trying to interview her here on the show in the home studio. Should we try to get Twizzlers, green tea, and fried chicken for her?
Yes.
And a shake weight, you said?
Yes, a shake weight. So she can jerk off her shake weight, yes.
So you're working with Stacey Lynn Matthews.
Mimi
M. First, who we've had quite a few times on the show. Who else?
Manila Luzon.
Which, once you see her as a monkey, you can never unsee her as a monkey.
Yeah. She was the Asian glamazon.
She was like beautiful. A heartbeat away. She was a Raja away from winning that contest.
And once Raja dies?
She'll be winner. So Raja has to... Are you managing Raja?
No.
No.
Oh. Okay.
And are anybody else from the show?
I love Raja.
Right. Okay. Are you managing anybody else right now? Did we get them all?
I'm working with Carmen Correa a little bit. I'm working with a lot of the girls on the show. And, it's like... They have so much potential right now because there's a huge resurgence in the gay entertainment scene.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, it was a lot about like dance music and all these dance artists. And right now, all of the gay clubs and bars across the country are booking entertainment again. And it's because of RuPaul's Drag Race and a lot of these gay oriented shows on Logo and Bravo.
Mm-hmm. And it is. We've said it. It's RuPaul's Drag Race has actually brought in more entertainment, and mm-hmm. people are booking people again. There was a period in time when we first started podcasting in 2005. It was talent hardly ever came through town, or if it did, it was a DJ. So,
and the nice thing about it is, it's you know, like RuPaul's Drag Race for drag queens. It's like iPhones and iPods are for iPhone and iPod accessory makers. Like it creates a whole secondary economy. Floating around the fact that now there's a public appetite for drag performers, specifically these girls, and it's really easy to make a business out of this.
Yeah, you it's. Know? I mean, it's really a brand, and each girl, for them, it's a business, and some of them decide to take it seriously and you know pursue other things, and others don't do anything with it.
I know it's not a polite thing to ask, but I'll ask it anyways. It's about money. Like they're actually making a living off of this stuff.
They are, yes.
So is it challenging for them? Like, are some of them doing better? Are some of the queens smarter about it? Because I'm always guessing that the ones that win the competition don't always fare the best. Like, for example, last season, Pandora Box, I've always said, is the one that's actually like monetizing it much better than the winner herself. Well, and where is Bibi Zahra Benet these days?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that Pandora Box had for her is that she was smart and she knew what to do with... what she was given. Like she created a website, she worked her social media, and mm-hmm. she had a great personality. She was very likable and she got out there and she worked it. And, you know, she makes very good money what she does. She's still touring, like, you know, 80 to 100 cities a year.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. And she's doing very well for herself. And, you know, just because you place in the top one, two, or three in the show doesn't mean that you have the best show. You know, I mean, I've seen girls from the show that, you know, were kicked off very early that deliver amazing shows live, but then they don't draw very many people into the bar. But then I've seen other queens on the show who were like the winner or second place or third place or fourth place or whatever, and they draw, you know, 1,000 people into the club, but then they only go on stage and do one number and people are like, eh, you know, and it's like, mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to see the reaction from, you know, both like the club owners who pay for the talent and the people who attend the club that come to see them. And, you know, it's.
Right. I've seen that because I was kind of surprised too. I'll name one person was Morgan McMichaels, who got kind of kicked off early last year, not this past season, the season before. And when I saw her perform, I was stunned. And then you never really got to see that on the show. And I think Pandora Box too is like that kind of person where she was like, there was in the top five, I think, or top six. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so much more funny, so much more entertaining than the actual winner.
Well, and how about the girl? I mean, if you really want to draw attention to an example, mm-hmm. the girl, and I'm forgetting her name, but she said, I am from Chicago, and I will
Monique.
Fuck you
No,
up.
Monique.
Mystique.
Mystique. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves her for that one line. All you need is one good line on mm-hmm. that show, and she's like making money off of that one single line, and she milks it. She'll show up for a gig, stand up on stage, and people are like, Mystique, and the audience is kind of like, woo, you know, and then she goes, yeah. I'm from Chicago and I will fuck you up. And the crowd roars.
Yes.
And that's, you know, embracing your moment in the sun is really what makes and breaks these girls.
Yeah. Did you guys watch the reunion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What happened? Think? Okay. So we talked about this on the show that Mimi I'm First had a Lady Gaga like dress, or Lady Gaga had a Mimi I'm First dress, which she was pregnant with all sorts of squishy stuff in her belly, but the producers cut it off, like they edited it off from below.
Mm-hmm. So you never saw this fetus growing inside of Mimi I'm First.
Which is really disappointing, I think.
I thought it was a spectacular dress, and Mimi was upset about it on Facebook.
Yeah, she should be upset about it, mm-hmm. you know, because it is a really fabulous dress. Yeah. They're trying to cut a bitch.
So what happened?
Well, it happened. I mean,
they made a decision not to have it.
Yeah. She spent a lot of creativity and effort and money into creating a dress that she wanted to show to her fans and to TV, and they decided not to show it. And
if I were Mimi I'm First, I would, you know, knowing that it's like, I'm the boat rocker,
mm-hmm.
I'm the cage rattler, mm-hmm. I would just shown up and be like, peace, love. I would have been, you know, I've brought my own necklace that I want to give to every one of the queens, and I want peace and love, you know.
Well, she kind of did that after she got kicked off. She did our show, and she was very nice about everything, and I thought maybe she was just a little bit too nice. And talking about, like, Shangela throwing a drink in her face, she's like, oh, it's okay, it's whatever, and I'm like,
it's not nice.
It's not nice. No. How could you say that that's nice? In real life.
Let me tell you, if Shangela is here in the home studio, uh-huh. I'm not offering her anything to drink.
And Shangela
just saying.
Shangela's going to be at Pride Fest with Mimi I'm First the same mm-hmm. night as Monique.
And you're really? Not giving her anything to drink until after she's done performing, right?
Correct, yeah. Wait, I have to tell you about the drink limitations that Logo imposed on the Drag Race girls early in the show.
Really? What? They couldn't have cocktails.
Well, after the whole incident. So originally, when they first started filming the show, they were just allowed to drink. You know, mm-hmm. they were sponsored by Absolut.
Yeah.
And they could just drink as many cocktails as they wanted. And after some drama started happening, decided to put a two drink limit on cocktails after mm-hmm. every episode.
Because of Shangela ruined it for everybody.
I don't know if it was that, but they just imposed a new rule midway through the show.
Didn't they sign a waiver, like, if I'm beheaded, disarmed, I won't sue Logo and World of Wonder and RuPaul? I mean, really, like, that was one of the highlights of the season, is seeing the drag. As horrific it is to see people fighting, it's also very engaging. And, you know, sometimes our community doesn't get along. And I think it's interesting how a reality TV show is going to handle that. And I thought they handled it pretty well. You know, drag is not a contact sport.
Oh, that was the other thing. So on the reunion show, Mimi had two t-shirts. One, she had a t-shirt that she gave to India that said, I got picked up by Mimi I'm First and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And then she had another t-shirt that she gave to RuPaul that they didn't air. Well, what did that t-shirt say?
Well, okay, so Mimi handed the shirt to RuPaul and she got very upset about it.
RuPaul got upset or Mimi got upset?
RuPaul got upset about it. From what I heard. I wasn't there on set, but this is what I heard her say. Rue got upset because the shirt said, drag is not a contact sport, but it would be a lot more fun if it were.
So did you think that RuPaul, because that's what RuPaul had said that when Mimi picked up India, she's like, and that's when she kicked her off. She's like, drag is not a contact sport. Shantae, you leave.
Shantae, sashay away.
Yeah. And so when Mimi gave her that t-shirt, was Rue like, is this a threat?
Oh, you think RuPaul's like, oh, you are not touching me.
No.
Yeah.
Because RuPaul, you know, RuPaul... Holt has a lot of class and a lot of sass, but she also knows when a queen's out to get her. And just, I've been around in public spaces when she's like, she sees some, you know, fan slash enemy coming at her. And she's like, oh, no. And she's tall. I mean, if RuPaul got into a fight with any of those girls, she'd win.
And I would just run away between her legs.
RuPaul is like built out of steel. I mean, when I met her here in Chicago when she was touring with Star Booty and I gave her a big hug and stuff. I mean, that woman is like, I mean, RuPaul is muscle. It's like he's tall. He's like a ballet dancer's body, you know, and everyone's like, he's so thin. And I was like, yeah, because he works out. And so if you got into a fight with RuPaul, Mark, you're like not buying this.
Well, my husband's prone to exaggeration.
Listen, RuPaul is bigger and stronger than you, and she will always win.
Just because her hair is taller than me.
She's tall.
I know she's tall.
And listen, you don't want to get into a fight with a tall person.
She's so tall, she requires a turtle top limo.
She does?
Yeah, in her rider, you have to get her a turtle top limo.
Oh, because of the wig.
Yeah. You have to get her a limo that she can stand up in. And be 7.5 feet tall.
So she's like the Pope. She needs to be able to stand.
Yeah, you need to have that little bubble.
Because otherwise she's got to like lay down like this. We've all done that before.
Yeah.
Wow. You know.
Uh-oh. Mark, it's not considered entertainment when you're naked lying down in the backseat of a limo.
So what else has happened with the drag queens of the RuPaul's Drag Race?
Well, you know, some are a little crazy and... they mostly get along very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, despite all the drama on the show, they're very nice to each other. They all talk. They have their own little like private forum that they exchange communication
with. Oh, they have like a website.
Yeah.
They have a website that
they have a private forum. Website. Yes.
So can I know people are dying to hack that.
Because I heard about it. This is how I found out. Because
Jade Sotomayor,
who was on
first season.
Yeah, she was the fourth runner-up. She lost to Rebecca Glasscock, who's nobody likes her. And so she was pissed about leaving. Anyway, so Jade's mad because she works at Spin here in Chicago. And some of the other places won't book her because they feel like she belongs to Spin. So she's mad about that.
Well, you know, I think clubs want to have something special and unique. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily they're trying to be nice to Spin. It's that they feel like she's doing too many gigs at Spin, so... It's not special to have her at their club. I'm guessing from their perspective. I don't work for any of these clubs, so I don't know. But I would figure that you wouldn't want to have something special and unique that's unique to your own venue.
Yeah.
And so instead of being like understanding, she's like, she's pissed. She's angry. And she's posting shit on her Facebook page for the world to see. I don't know if that's such a good idea. She's saved that for the private forums. But I want to get into it.
The other thing, the reason why I found out about this private forums, she's also fighting with another drag queen in town who I don't know what this other drag queen said, but Jade was not liking it. And so she's like, oh, you want to get on RuPaul's Drag Race? You know, basically F you. I'm going to post in our private forums about you so they all know when you're coming.
And I think some of the producers are on that forum too.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's good that they have each other and it's like being a Miss America pageant. You know, they all stay friends for the rest of their lives.
She said it's a tight sisterhood.
Yeah. And it keeps growing.
Even if it now
there's a new
do
batch
the
brewing.
Contestants from the third season actually like talk to the second and first season contestants?
Yeah, a lot of the newer season contestants talk to past seasons to learn about the process, because when you first go into it, you have no idea what's going to happen or the process. Like, they lock you up in a hotel room and they take away your cell phone. Mm-hmm. They actually remove the phones from the actual hotel room. Like, you have no way to communicate.
But see, that's why our girl Jade was real smart, because she was on the first floor. She said, I opened up my window, I crawled out, I went to the bar, and
it's like Punky Brewster.
Well, you know, I would just bring a second cell phone. Simple, yeah. Probably like have the producer's cell phone and the cell phone that you use.
But some of the girls said that when they came in, that the searchers or whoever was checking them out weren't very thorough. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them were able to sneak in.
Those drag queens
their phones
can smuggle
and laptops.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They have think holes. Of all the places you can put them.
They know if how
you
to can pad.
If you can tuck a dick up your ass.
You can tuck a phone.
What's the hardest part about like representing or managing a drag queen?
I think their lateness and how long it takes them to get ready. Mm-hmm. I mean, some drag queens, it takes them like 3-4 hours to get ready. To get a makeup and
so why doesn't that just get budgeted into the time?
It does, but for some reason it's they still end up falling behind. You know, they get distracted because they're sitting there in their dressing room in front of a mirror, and then they have their laptop here and their phone here, and both of them are like beeping constantly, and you know, they stop applying makeup and they look at that, and so you know, it's just they're very distracted.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, best of luck to you with all these things. It's going to be a remarkable event. And that's going to be June the 10th through the 13th. Is that
12th?
Correct?
10th through the 12th.
Yeah. 10th through the 12th. But that's so the fun starts on Friday and ends on a Sunday,
yeah, it
right?
starts on Friday with Monique, and then Saturday with Salt and Peppa and Pam Ann. Ooh. And then Sunday with Leanne Rimes and Shelley Wright. Those are the headliners. But there's going to be over 150 LGBT bands and acts, comedians, performers there. So it really is like the gay Lollapalooza.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be so exciting. And of course, you know, come to the Doubletree Hotel lobby and to the cocktail lounge and can hang out with us.
Watch Pam Ann, Monique, and Mimi Am first get in a three-way fight.
Oh.
Who will win?
I don't know.
I think Mimi Am first. So you're trying to actually push Mimi Am first to get into professional WWF wrestling like Snooki.
I think that's where she belongs. I mean, every show that I've done with her, she is picking up people from her audience and like spinning them around her head and then slamming them back down on the ground.
You
gently.
Need to get her roided up. Start giving her some of your Addison's disease medication. Yeah. Get her some steroids. Get her to the gym. Work out. Pump up that muscle. Yeah. And I want to see a drag queen WWF wrestler.
I need to increase the insurance policy.
She's going to die.
Well, we're running out of time, but we have some fantastic news. I have some sad news actually for Mark.
What TV show is canceled? He said this to me before the show because he was like all kinds of sad. I have sad news for you. I'm like, oh yeah, what is it? What TV? He's like, oh, it's not your mother dying, it's
I didn't
TV
say anything. You know,
it
I
was
said,
your smug condescension is what said.
You
it
spent
off.
So much time watching television that is the center of your life, and it's like, and you know, more power to you if you know what you like and you know what you love. But you never asked me. It's like, is my mom all right? Have gay rights
well,
been?
Well, if my mother was sick and dying, you would not say it with that kind of thing.
Or
you
your
have some sympathy.
But so it's anyways. The thing is, Christopher Meloni will not be on the next season of Law and Order SVU.
Why not?
His contract has not been renewed, and he will not be back for the show's 13th season, and so his character will be written off.
Wow.
And Mariska Hargitay's character will also be phased out, and rumors are bringing Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I heard that. I think the franchise, because I think it's a, you know, it's a good TV show. I'd also, pardon me, I had already heard that, just so you know.
Oh.
I think it's still making, I think they were trying to phase him out a little bit too. But yeah, I think it's okay. It's time for some new blood, you know? Listen. When that show started 13 years ago, he was real hot.
He still is hot.
He's still hot, but he's not 13 Please. Years ago hot.
And so people are going on the internet that Lady Gaga's latest outfit, where she has those black spots in her eyes, are actually furniture pads that have been stuck onto her face.
Really?
Yeah, I'm like, everyone's kind of like going, getting all excited about that, you know?
We got a ton of stuff on Facebook.
Oh, let's read through those.
Oh my God, tons. Tom Dolman wants to know, could you talk about prejudice against tops and so-called straight acting gays? I personally feel that a lot of people in my local community don't take my sexuality seriously because I don't conform to the camp stereotype.
Stop for a second. Look at this guy. Roy. Who is it? Tom Dolman?
Tom Dolman.
Baby, you are in for some bruising. Okay. So he's young. So cut him some slack, people.
Okay.
But any guy who says you're straight acting and is obsessed with his appearance isn't straight acting. He's a gay man who's obsessed with his appearance. Mm-hmm. And most straight men that I know of, that if you really want to be straight acting, you're going to act like Tom Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to be a big old schlump sitting on the sofa, you know? If you're concerned with your male appearance and it's something that gay men do and do very well. And so I don't think it's necessarily to identify that as heterosexual or straight is you're misguided, because masculinity and cultivating your masculinity is something that gay men do very well, because we're very good at playing roles and characters because we've been doing that all our lives, hiding in the closet. And so when we finally blossom into our sexuality, we can fem it up with all the girls and butch it up with all the boys. I mean, look, you have a fight. Every time I see you, David, I'm sorry, what's your name again? I'm blanking out on your name. You always have a new look. You have all this extreme fashion, you know, and people love it, but you're always like cultivating that. Do you see it like as a costume?
I just like to be unique and express, you know, interesting styles.
You have wristwatch that does it. You just wear it for fashion and has nothing to do with telling the time, because you actually have a smartphone.
I don't set the time on any of my watches.
What else do we got, Mark?
Oh, yes. So Donnie Brown, who was a guest on our show before, says, whatever happened to the drag queen that was living out of the U-Haul and doing Craigslist scam? Her name escapes me, which is a total lie, because he's the guy that cut her wig on Tabitha's hair salon makeover. I don't know. I've heard that Lady Vera Parker was her name, and that she has to come back to town once a month for some kind of probation meeting, and that she's seen around Boys Town with a little tote bag with her, like, her clothes.
Lady Vera Parker's back in Chicago.
Every once a month, because she has to come back for probation, and she's seen around town, you know, carrying a little, like, what do they call those little suitcases?
A tote bag.
Like, on wheels.
A carry-on. Lisa, mm-hmm. Schatz, it's not straight acting, Tom. There's no gay acting or straight acting. It's all a stereotype. Well, it's a form of role playing that we do. Anyways, my best friend got me a Day of Silence shirt, and her mom got weirded out because she had it, and then my best friend told her that she got it for me, and then told her mom, as long as it's not yours. Her mom is like my second mom. I felt like I got hit in the stomach hard. You should talk about parents being difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So Lisa, Tom, and all the people who don't get along with your parents, cut your parents slack.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've had your entire life to get comfortable with being LGBT. And, you know, relatively so, they've only had the last couple of years when you've come out to them to get used to the idea. And, you know, sometimes your parents don't come around, but, you know, be more patient, be more giving and loving than sometimes your parents can't be giving and can't be loving, but they're still human beings and they deserve your patience.
So be kind and educate them.
Bring them closer to you. And sometimes you need to be a little bit further away from your parents, and you need to create some distance so you can grow and heal as a person, because you didn't get the love and the acceptance that you needed from your parents. But at a certain point as an adult, you have to forgive your parents for not being there for you, because they're just human beings, and sometimes human beings fail each other.
And Alex Green writes, did you guys ever find out what happened to VMAR's Fred? I was listening to a show from a while ago that was on my iTunes. It still cracks up at Fausto's impression of him. Haha.
Victoria, what? I want a candy bar.
We don't know what happened to him. And Victoria's like called Fred's family, and they don't know either. So who knows what happened to Fred?
He's somewhere. I think he was like the character in One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest. He took the water fountain, threw it in the window, and ran to freedom.
Yeah,
who fly, knows? Fred, fly.
So Mike Riggenbach is inviting the gentleman who is talking about tops to come to the U.S. because he thinks that we have a shortage of tops here in America.
The thing about it is that when you're young, it's a lot harder to take a cock up your ass. But as you get older and more, you know, those muscles loosen up. Mm. And so it's easier. Mm. So if you find it, let's talk about tops and bottoms.
What do you call a top in Feast of Fun's show?
What?
What do you call a top in Feast of
Fun? Is that a joke? Show? What's a punchline?
A guest.
Are you offering? That's pretty good.
As Mae West says, you got to taste all the fruit. Mm. But at the same time, don't feel pressure to do something sexually just because you think you have to do it. Do it because you want to do it. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, use protection. But at the same time, don't kill yourself if you didn't. Go get tested and move forward, you know? Mm-hmm. David Huggins, what criticism has been directed at you that has been the most difficult for you to let go? David, do you get criticized by the performers? Or, like, do they ever, like, go, I hate you. I want to kill you.
I like how you turn that against him.
Well, or for me.
Right. I think it's directed towards you or towards because
it's not easy to take negative feedback from anyone. So. Well, I mean, you're our guest and I want to
include you in the conversation. But I will sponge your negativity.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of those things that I've learned. Another thing that I've learned from RuPaul is you can't answer your critics. If somebody is just criticizing you just to criticize you, I mean, you don't need to respond. I mean, if they have a constructive criticism, then that's important and that is something you can deal with. But if it's just like, you're a jerk, I hate you, I hate everything you have to say, that's just water off my back at this point in time.
But we Mark and I get into arguments at the gym, in the Mark loves to just blab full volume in the men's dressing room at the gym we go to with people in their most vulnerable nakedness around us. And some guy came up to us and was like, I thought that this was just an act, but you guys are exactly like that in person.
We just kind of looked at him, and then he was like, he was half naked, and then he walked away.
Wow.
So, yeah. This person also wants to know, are we the same on air as we are off? I think we're pretty much the same.
Yeah, you guys are real.
But you don't want to, let's see, am I real? At the same time, you know, we intentionally try to fill this hour that we share with you with information, with entertainment, and ideas. And anybody, when you're hanging around with them, it's not going to be an hour of full of information and ideas. Even when you see these entertainers on stage, they've prepared material to be engaging. When they're on a talk show, they've been interviewed by an assistant beforehand. And so the conversation flows really easily. But I would say naturally, conversation between people when it's unscripted and unprepared is, I think, really tricky.
Yeah. Well, I think when you do your show, you're like from Concentrate, but when we're just hanging out, you're not from Concentrate.
Well, it's also give and take. And the thing is that, like, sometimes when people meet you, they're like, oh, I'm having my own private podcast, continue speaking. And it's just like, I can't talk anymore. My voice is, you haven't said anything to me.
I'm trying to entertain you, but you won't respond.
You know, tell me what your favorite pet is, anything.
Who will have Oprah on her final show? That's tomorrow. Oh. I'm guessing Michael Jackson's resurrected body. David M. Lyons wants to know. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a bunch of celebrities, right?
I'm not sure who's going to be on the final show.
I heard it was just her in a chair crying.
Yeah, it was her in a chair for most of the show. And then I'm not really sure what goes on beyond that. And she says, it's not goodbye. You know, we will meet again.
But what was this whole United Center thing? She performed it. Did she do something?
It's one of her final episodes.
Yeah.
But not the final episode. The thing about it is, like, Oprah's being very facetious with this thing because it's really not goodbye. It's hello to own. And Oprah is going to still be on television and she's still creating content and she's still interviewing people and she's still having her aha moments. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the Oprah Winfrey show is over. It's that now you're getting Oprah 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And she owns it.
Mm-hmm. And she's plucked off the syndication because she doesn't need it anymore because she's on cable.
It's the Oprah farewell tour.
And Derek Weber says, have you guys ever gotten Honey West on for an interview? No, I'd love to. Well, you should definitely have Honey West on. She's a local celebrity. We'll have to have her on.
And she's funny. Mm-hmm. She actually interviewed us, or me, about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. when I was a young little drag queen. Mm.
And Joe Fitzrick wants to know, did they just drop the N-bomb during Glee? Did you watch Glee tonight? They had a commercial on it, and it was, you know, it was an African-American, and he says, don't call me the N-word, but he actually said the N-word. And then a Jewish person, don't call me kike, and then a person saying, don't call me fag. And then it was the girl with Down syndrome, Becky, was sitting next to Jane Lynch, and she goes, and don't call me retarded. And then they go on and say, the R word is not a word that you should use. Don't call people retarded. It's a hurt word.
As much as I support, you know, people wanting to, you know, you can't dismantle prejudice and bigotry without addressing other people's needs. Comparing them in that way, I don't know, is necessarily the best, most constructive thing to do. Mm. Does saying, asking people with special needs and physical and mental disabilities, not calling them retarded, is that going to help them with their health care? Is that going to increase wheelchair access ramps, for example? Does that really make the world a better place? Is that really the most important issue for physically and mentally disabled people? Mm. I don't think it is. And I think that, you know, making that kind, you know, I think that's stretching it a bit.
How does the word fag make you guys feel?
I just think words are things we use to communicate with each mm-hmm. other. And when somebody is using slur words against you, it's because they don't have the way to vocalize what their feelings are and their frustrations they are. Mm-hmm. And any kind of slur word, you know, I'm glad that people are able to use them. At the same time, I also want them to use it as an opportunity to bring awareness and to bring people closer to each other. And when we start going around and having funerals for certain words or declaring that certain words are taboo and prohibited, it doesn't really help a conversation. Those aren't words that I would want to use. Those are words that I don't like using. But at the same time, I'm, you know, annoyed, but I'm not upset.
It's not that disturbing.
It. Yeah. And I'm just like, you know, and people like saying that, you know, certain slur word is just like the N-word, I think is really insulting to African-Americans whose ancestors were brought here as slaves. You know, like a huge percentage of their ancestors died on boats. And you're saying that your slur word that may or may not have the same kind of darkness and legacy that the N-word has is the same. It's going to piss off a lot of people, and it's not really creating a conversation.
Well, you've talked about this before, but when you're measuring pain and hurt, is how nobody wins when you do that. Because like if somebody calls a Jewish person a kike or a black person an N-word, yes, the blacks went through slavery. It was horrible. I think it's done horrible things to this whole country even today. But then you look at the Jewish Holocaust. It's like, well, how do you measure these two profound evils against each other? And you just can't.
Yeah, when you have a misery contest, mm-hmm. nobody mm-hmm. wins.
Right.
But at the same time, when you're trying to dismantle prejudice, homophobia, racism, ignorance, mm-hmm. you can't dismantle one without addressing the other. And that's really where that should come from. And you know, they're just not thinking too hard about it. They're going for mm-hmm. cliches. They're going for bumper sticker mm-hmm. slogans to make people feel good and so they can change the channel and go back to being, you know, saying retarded things. You know, it's basically so they could go back to their prejudices, you know, so they feel like they did something. Very valid,
like when I grew up, I have a sister who has Down syndrome, and we grew up saying like she's retarded,
and that retarded. Was, you know, do a lot of people with mental disabilities feel anger when they hear that word? Is that really part of the reality?
You know, I can't really say. I don't know.
You know what's interesting is that black people call each other niggers. Don't gay people call each other faggots. Retarded people call each other retards. Like, no, really. It's like we make fun of ourselves in a way and we use those names. Mm-hmm. So it's like, are they really that offensive if we're calling those names to each other in our own community?
They carry power.
They carry power. You want to use words that bring people closer to you. And that's why, you know, hopefully, you know, I think people will forgive us for saying words that might offend them. Mm-hmm. My goal is to have a conversation with people, and certainly that's what we love to hear from you. If go to our website, feastoffun.com, and weigh in this. What do you think about slur words? What do you think about offensive language? How best do we deal with it? We want to hear from you, and please keep it respectful. And we do have
filters. So if you do use those words on our site, though, your comment will not show up. So try to use a N word as opposed to saying the word out. Because also actually, like, you know, search engines actually penalize your website for having a lot of slur words.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Of course. I don't want my kid going to some retarded website. I'm just kidding.
Ha ha. Push those buttons.
Yes, I did.
Listen, I want to remind the listeners, we can't do the show without your support. So please visit feastoffun.com/donate and make a contribution to the production of this show.
And we want to thank David Charpentier, who's fantastic and fabulous.
And ever so cute.
Thank you.
And with
thank
fierce you
for
hair.
And we have to apologize to your boyfriend, Jason, for keeping you here so late. And you guys have such an early flight in the morning.
And thank you for fulfilling my vegan rider upon arrival.
We made him a salad.
We're going to leave you here with some music that Pandora Box likes to sing. It's Shayna Firm and the Upper Deckers. Thank you for sticking it in me. It's hilarious and it's a fabulous song. Get it on our website, feastoffun.com, and 5%. Of your iTunes Music Store purchase, if you click the link first on our site, goes to support the show. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Had a really great time. We should do it again. Great job to you. Your moves were sweet. Who knew that's where the little neck massage would lead? Your candlelit apartment smelled like orange cream pie. Guess I didn't realize you were gonna stick it in me. Thanks for sticking it in me. I had a really great time. Put your hand on it, even though I hadn't planned on it. You stuck it in me, you stuck it in me. You stuck it in me, you stuck it in me. You stuck it in me, you stuck it in me. You stuck it in me like an orange cream pie. I don't even like Chinese food, but I didn't wanna be rude. And my fortune cookie said, let him stick it in you. Thanks for sticking it in me. Sing it inside of